You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we've got three, maybe even four-day weeks coming up. And it's a thing. We've got Human Rights Day tomorrow, so that's a four-day week.
Yeah.
The week after is Good Friday, so that's a four-day week. And after that, another one because of Easter Monday. And then I think May the 1st makes it four in a row.
Day, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we can hardly afford it, can we, productivity-wise?
Look, I don't think it makes that much difference, to be honest. Retail people spend just as much retail as what they do in a full week, maybe even more on a long weekend because they go shopping and they go out to restaurants and that. Production facilities, the guys allow for it. I mean, they just pay extra wages. You know, if you're in a 247 production capacity, you're still working public holidays. You're just paying extra for the people who work on the public holidays.
Mm.
And then financial services like us, you know, we would lose very little revenue at all, you know, on a public holiday because people still bank. We still earn all our transaction fees. We still earn all our interest. So I don't think it's as big as what it's made out to be.
It is slightly disruptive. Oh, actually, maybe it's not disruptive. Maybe I'm being stupid. Maybe I think that some people, I mean, like, for example, I'm trying to rustle up a few podcasts for next week, and they say, well, actually, my last day is Wednesday, and I'm coming back on May the 2nd or something, and I get 3 weeks holiday for only eight working days or something like that.
Days, yeah.
So actually, that makes it more efficient, and then they work for the rest of the year.
You don't have to worry about it. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it with me.
No, I know, because you're
public holidays, a whole lot, yeah.
I know, but you do go on holiday quite a lot. It was only 2 weeks ago that you were telling me you'd been off to Namibia for 3 or 4 days.
So. Yeah, but that was for two nights, yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting off subject here. I actually like the two-day, two-night, maybe three-night breaks, but mainly a two-night break. To me, that is just wonderful. You get a proper break from your daily routine.
Yes.
But you don't just sit there and do nothing. Because when you go somewhere for 10 days, you just sit and do nothing. And I don't like doing nothing. So I like the short breaks, and then you come back here and you carry on working.
I agree with you entirely. I've never been on a holiday for more than, say, 7-8 days, because once those 7-8 days, you're getting to the best part of the holiday, and I've always said that the best part of the holiday is not going on holiday, because I find that stressful, but
coming home. Yeah,
it's coming back home.
Yeah, I love coming home. The longest holiday I've been on is 6 nights.
Yeah, that's the limit, definitely. Anyway, Wayne, as you quite rightly said, I drifted off subject there and you fell into my trap. This week we've got a quiet time today, of course, because the JSE is closed tomorrow and probably half closed on Friday. But we had a retail sales number today for January, down 2.1% year on year. And that is, to me, because of silly days like Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and not silly days because of the Christmas spending period, but now people are maxed out on their credit facilities, and therefore retail sales were obviously going to be down in January.
Yeah, well, retail sales, January is normally a relatively poor month because it's January and people haven't got the cash. But yes, the sort of Black Friday and that has disrupted the so-called festive season.
Mm.
But I've actually, and this is not my original idea, I'll say it straight up front now.
Yeah.
There could be a little bit of a bonanza coming for people facing the companies facing the consumers directly. And that's this two-pot pension system. A lot of people are going to take that money out of their savings, and they're all going to say it's for an emergency, for a disaster. But some of that is going to trickle into consumer expenditure at furniture shops and clothing stores, et cetera, et cetera. And that's coming over the next year and a half. Eh?
Hmm.
Because I think they're going to be, the pension fund administrators, when it becomes effective in September, I think they're going to be flooded with claims with people wanting to draw out of the savings pot of their two-pot pension scheme. Because a lot of people, you won't pay that much tax on it.
Yes.
Because a lot of people will draw out you know, relatively small amounts of money. And I think a lot of that's going to leak into consumer expenditure. And that's going to be good for the clothing retailers and the furniture guys, etc. It might only gather steam next year, but it's coming. And I think it's going to be quite big.
It's very strange because the government has always been quite proactive, and I'll give it credit for doing so, quite proactive about getting people to save more. But the two-pot scheme, from what you've said, is giving them a tax treatment which allows them to take out rather than to save. And they'll go off and say, well, I haven't spent any money for 2 years. I'm going off to for a two-day holiday, or I'm going to go off to Truworths or Fashini and buy a load of clothes.
I think a lot of people, and I don't know the exact numbers, but I think you can draw up to 20% of your pension subject to a maximum amount. It's obviously not 50% of your pension you can put into the savings pot, but I think it's 20%. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, a lot of people are going to take that money because it'll be viewed as almost money for nothing, as a bonus, you know. It's just there.
Well, it's not money for nothing, but because they've worked for it, but they'll.
Yeah, no, but you know, it is money for nothing because you didn't have it beforehand.
Yeah.
You'd have only accessed that money when you retired, on a monthly basis, spread over your retirement period. So it is, and one of the rationale behind the introduction of this two-pot system is a lot of people were in genuine financial stress, and they would actually resign to get access to their whole pension fund and then cash in the whole thing. And that was the big rationale behind this two-pot system, is that they don't want people to resign and leave a job just because they're facing financial stress now and then just cash in their pension, because then they got no pension and then the government's got to look after them.
It sounds like a short-term fix to me. Then you pay later.
No, I don't in principle agree with it. I think they should have just said, well, you know, if some people do get into stress and they resign to access their pension, then, you know, they do it. Because it's certainly not the majority of people who do that. You know, it's probably a very, very few, relatively few number of people do that. But anyway, So we can discuss it as much as we like.
Yes, it is. And also what's here is what you've spoken about before. So what we've got is a government here that says we haven't got any money. We haven't got enough money to serve the needs of the people, whether it be benefits or import cover or whatever it is. So we're going to the two-pot system, first of all, just to sort of ameliorate the problems, the short-term problems that people have. And the second is the recent budget with, you know, dipping into what is essentially government savings, government cover. So there's two things, and you've highlighted them very nicely. There's two things, and it's not desperation, but it certainly says that they're looking forward and saying things aren't great.
Look, first of all, on that foreign exchange gain account, as long as you do it once, and I understand the government's in a pickle now, and it's not all their fault. It's not all their fault. You can just look at company results. Mining companies, and after bonanza earnings, they're falling 60, 70, 80%. You know, so their revenue is way lower than what was anticipated. And as long as they only dip into this reserve once.
Yes.
Because remember, it's not actual money, It's not real money.
No, it's just an
money
entry
sitting in a bank account.
It's just an entry,
it's a book
in
entry,
a ledger
on revaluing an asset.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a book entry on revaluing an asset. Now, you're revaluing the asset now when the rand is very, very weak and, in my opinion, undervalued. And if I'm right and we get a commodity cycle, you know, the same old stuck record story of mine, and we get a commodity up cycle over the next 2 to 3 years, the rand goes to 16, 17, wherever, that reserve disappears like the morning dew.
Yes, it does. You're quite right. And it doesn't come back either.
Unless the rand weakens, which the rand will weaken again, then it does come back. But the point is, and I don't know what the actual number is, and this is not my forecast, but should the rand, well, look, let's put it this way. Last time the rand bombed, it hit about 17 or 18 when Nene was fired and Desmond was put in.
Yeah.
You know, the next stop was 1320. from 17 or 18. Now, if the rand now goes to 13.20, I think that account will be negative. In other words, it'll go into overdraft with this 150 billion they've pulled out. It'll actually be a liability. It won't be a reserve. And of course, reserve banks do funny accounting. I don't know how they're going to pay this 150 billion across. Are they going to sell dollars to raise rands to pay it across? Or they're just going to do what accountants hate and can't conceptualize, a one-sided journal entry. They can literally create money out of fresh air. They can just deposit 150 billion into the government's bank account, because that's what reserve banks do. They can, as we've seen in Zimbabwe and Argentina and many, many places, they can literally print money. They can create money out of fresh air. So, and I'm amazed no one else has followed up on this, but are they going to sell the equivalent of 150 billion rand in dollars and then take that actual receipt and put it in the bank, or are they going to leave our reserves untouched and essentially just give the government an advance and debit that, you know, the one-sided journal entry, just debit that against the foreign exchange gain account? I don't know, because I would hate to see our reserves drop by, $15 billion. Well, sorry, $7.5 billion. I hate to see that happen. But anyway, yeah, we'll find out.
We will too. And the one thing that's probably linked to this, I may be wrong, I may be branded a conspiracy theorist, is I'm looking at the South African 10-year bond yield. End of May 2023, less than a year ago, the market was that market was 11.25. Then it messed around a bit, and 1st of October 2023, it was 10.89. Then we had a lovely run. And where it came down to, and let me just give this is very rough stuff, 960 to 970 on the 7th of January of this year. Now, suddenly, it's gone from there to a rather startling 1070, 10.70%. Yeah. And it tells me that with stock markets doing well overseas and, risk on with people buying Bitcoin and buying gold and buying the US stock market, etc., suddenly the South African bond market getting stuffed. There's disinvestment there. And I'm looking at the trend. I'm no chartist, but the downtrend in yields has been broken. And this thing looks very, very vulnerable. And I wonder why that is, Wayne.
Yeah, I don't know any particular reason. But what I do is know is close to 11. It's a good long-term buy. Eh? You know, a friend of mine was looking at an annuity. Now, I know, and not a living annuity, a life annuity. And I know there are many great attractions to a life annuity. Essentially, no matter how long you live, you're going to get paid.
Yes.
Even if you live till 100, you're going to get paid. So there are many, many reasons as to why you should do this. But the annuity rate that he got, and this is all pre-tax, was quite a few percentage less than the bond, eh? So in theory, as long as you accept that, a living annuity keeps up with inflation and you get inflation, at least a life annuity keeps up to inflation and you get inflation-related increases in your annuity and all of these things. But, you could just take money and buy a government bond and earn 11% pre-tax. That's quite a good yield per year, eh?
Yeah, it is good. But I think my point, never mind the retirement or living annuity argument, which I've interviewed so many people about it and I still can't make my mind up which is the best. I'm talking more about the foreign participation in our bond market and whether they're giving South Africa the thumbs down, because we've gone from 9.70% to 10.70%.
That's not new news in South Africa getting the thumbs down in the last while. Look at our retail shares, look at our mining shares, look at our financial, look at all South African shares. They've been getting the thumbs down now for a while. But that's cyclical, I think, and I think the bond rate's also cyclical.
I don't know. There's something been going on in the last few weeks. But anyway, I hope I'm proved wrong. When we've got the US Federal Reserve make its decision on interest rates, probably a flatliner. In other words, interest rates unchanged in the States. But on the other hand, we had the Bank of Japan for the first time in not 17 weeks or months, but 17 years, raised interest rates above the negative.
Yeah.
And the wage increase on an annual basis in Japan is 5.28%, which is the highest for 31 years since 1991. Yeah. So we got the Japanese authorities going one way and the Fed and the ECB and many others going in the opposite direction.
Japan's been different since 1988.
Yeah, true.
They've been suffering from deflation since 88. They're praying for inflation, because they had so much debt in that big property boom in the 80s, where you were paying R1 million per square foot for property in the center of Tokyo.
Yeah.
People geared themselves up to the absolute hilt, and the banks were bankrupt, and they now literally are coming out or are changing the cycle. So they've been out of sync with the rest of the world for a significant time period. But the next big problem they face is their government debt. You know, the government was issuing debt at zero coupon and sometimes negative coupon. If you get what you want, inflation, then you're going to start paying higher bond yields. And when all that free stuff rolls over, the government is going to be squeezed like you cannot believe.
Mm.
But I suppose, like any politician, and this is not unique to our politicians, any politician worldwide only ever worries about the next election. They cannot take a long-term view on anything, because if they take a long-term view and do unpopular things, they're out at the next election. So governments with this election cycle are actually notoriously bad administrators of a country and of the country's economies. Huh? Mm. I'm still quite amazed that we, as allegedly a civilized society, have worked out that this is the best way to govern ourselves.
Have you ever been to
short-termism, populism?
Essentially, a politician, unless you're Vladimir Putin or President Xi, you know you're only going to be there for 4 to 6 years, something like that. So you say, right, what am I going to do now in order to appease the people that voted for me and try and keep the promises that I made to those people? President Xi, Putin, they don't care. They can do what they like because they're never going to be voted out. Wayne, have you been to Japan?
No, not Japan.
Then you realise why they've been out of step with the rest of the world. And I don't say that's a bad thing at all, because the Japanese people are quite incredible. And the food, you probably wouldn't leave, actually.
I would love that, yes.
You'd break your six-day rule on vacations, and you'd say to your travel agent or whatever, let's stay for another 6 days, because you cannot have enough Japanese food. It's unbelievable.
I agree with you on that. It is good.
It's magnificent. We'll get to food in a moment. UK inflation came in at 3.4%, a more than two-year low. And I suppose that's going to be replicated in the United States over the next few months, and interest rates will come down, if not tonight, Wayne.
Correct. Yeah, it's not tonight, but we listen to the verbiage. We listen to the what the governor says.
Mm. What's communicated. Yes, exactly. The Fed chair.
Very important, actually.
It is very important. It's very, very important ahead of the holiday season that people can go and have a nice holiday, knowing that they're saying, OK, we're not cutting now, but we're still targeting three cuts in 2024, and the market will love that.
I love that.
I will do. My daughter runs a wine bar, very close to you, actually, in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg. She runs a wine bar. It's a restaurant.
A wine bar?
Yeah, she runs a wine bar stroke restaurant, and it's also got a retail sector and everything. She's quite innovative. She's a great cook. She's having a dinner tonight for 30 people because it's her birthday, and she's hosting it. And I said, what are you doing? And she says, I'm making this and that and did little snacks and everything. But the main menu is hot dogs, because she's clever. If you're going to a party with 30 people, you don't want to sit down. You want to just grab something and stuff it in your mouth. And that's what a hot dog does. Mm. I don't know if you're a hot dog fan, right?
I actually am a hot dog fan. We, at home on the Saturday, when I'm there, because I'm normally in my garage on the Saturday, but when I'm there, there's a very strict routine that's run by the management. The first of the month is KFC Saturday.
All right.
And I'm not too keen on KFC. I grew up next to a KFC in Kimberley, and my mother was not a good cook, and she was a lazy cook. So I ate KFC for many a year. So KFC Saturdays is not big.
No.
But then the next one's Hot Dog Saturday.
Oh.
And we buy these American smoked hot dogs from Woolworths, and then you toast the buns just a little bit.
Okay.
And then you put butter and that cheap mustard.
Yeah.
Ketchup? Not expensive mustard. It's got to be that cheap mustard, some ketchup, and these lovely, really nice hot dog. And it's actually delicious. So even if I'm not at home on Hot Dog Saturday, I'll make sure there's one left over for me.
Yeah, and you see what my daughter's doing, Annabelle, her name is, she's making a sauerkraut as well. And I phoned her up to wish her happy birthday, and she more or less dismissed me. She said, "Dad, I'm really busy. Thanks for the call, and we'll speak next year or something." But she's making sauerkraut, the whole lot, and all sorts of different condiments that people can dip into. But when I think of hot dogs, I think of New York. You go to New York, there's one of those hot dog stands. You buy a New York dog and you stuff it in your face. It's wonderful.
No, I've unfortunately never been. I've been to the U.S. a couple of times, but I've never been to New York and had the cart. I remember in Maritzburg, Peter Maritzburg, when was this? Late 80s. The food regulations were relaxed a little bit and chaps were allowed to have food carts.
Yes.
And I went and got a hot dog from a food cart called A La Carte.
Yes. Clever.
And it was actually delicious. And then in Joburg, before COVID, there used to be Food Truck Fridays.
Oh.
And we went to quite a few of them. They were mainly at the Wanderers Cricket Ground, you know, on the little like side field on at the cricket ground.
Yeah.
And there were 20 or 30 food trucks there, and they had chaps playing the guitar, and it was actually a lovely outing, and you could eat what, you know, you'd have one little snack at one, and you're going to have Mexican at the other, and then you'll go and have pizza or Chinese or Oriental. It was actually a lovely outing, but it's never resurfaced post-COVID, unfortunately.
That's a shame. I love street food. It's fantastic. You get some really...
No, this was a lovely occasion. It was really fun. It was a nice outing on a summer's evening. Go there about 5:30, the sun's going down. There's some people entertaining you with a bit of music and a bit of guitar playing, and then you could do a quick circuit around all the food trucks to see which one sort of like caught your eye. And it was a lovely evening. And you sit on the grass and eat your food. No, it was actually really, really nice. It's a pity it's never resurfaced.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, street food is. Yeah, it's very sociable as well. If you do ever go to New York, go to a chain of hot dog stalls, shops called Papaya King. I don't know why they call it Papaya King, but they are renowned for their superb hot dogs. And now, as usual, I'm hungry. So yeah.
Now Shapiro's.
He's there. He's there now.
In New York now.
Yeah, he flew in yesterday.
But you must ask him. You must ask him when you interview him again.
Yeah.
Has he managed to buy a bagel?
Yeah,
he loves the bagel, but they're about R400 each.
I think he's paid something like $8 or something ridiculous for a bagel on the edge of Central Park. Because, you know, he's very vain. So he likes to keep himself fit, unlike you and I. And he runs around Central Park, and then he buys an orange juice and a bagel. And he was complaining to me about it last time he was there, about how much he was charged.
He's been moaning about the bagel price in New York for a sustained time period.
There we go again, having a go. And Shapiro doesn't
actually moan often. He's not a moany guy.
No, he's an upbeat fellow. Yeah. Okay, Wayne, I've got to go and have something to eat now. Thank you very much for your time. As always, have a wonderful Human Rights Day, and we'll speak before Easter because you never take any time off. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.